Illinois' 200th birthday is this coming Monday, December 3rd. Illinois is a major state with the sixth largest population. But Tara McClellan McAndrew says there was a time when statehood was far from certain. And for this week's Illinois Issues, she reports on how that all changed with a bit of deception. I had a chance to talk with her. Tara, let's go back 200 years. I doubt most people today can comprehend that there would even be a doubt as to whether Illinois would be ready to be a state, but it was a much different place than what we know today.
It was a much different place. A little bit more than 200 years ago, we were a territory. We weren't a state, of course. And frankly, we were a bit of a backland. We were the Wild West. Illinois really became a state when it did because of one young, ambitious man named Daniel Pope Cook. He went to D.C. to seek a patronage job and was unsuccessful. And when he came back, kind of all of a sudden, he decides we need to be a state. Well, being a state means that there will be more opportunity for everyone, presumably him included. I talked with state historian Sam Wheeler about Daniel Pope Cook's role in all of this.
He buys an interest in the first newspaper printed in the Illinois Territory, and that newspaper becomes his pulpit for advocating for statehood. And I also love this argument that Cook proposes in his newspaper. He says, the Illinois Territory is destined for statehood, so why delay the inevitable?
So you focus on Daniel Cook. You also focus on Nathaniel Pope, a relative of his.
Daniel was Nathaniel's nephew. Nathaniel Pope was the Illinois Territory congressional rep who could not vote at that time because we were a territory. And Nathaniel Pope, as one historian told me, basically kind of gets this letter in the mail saying, hey, we decided we want to become a state, and so he just takes it under his wing, makes that his cause, and does some things in the process that work greatly to our advantage as a future state, and they get the job done, and they get it done pretty darn fast.
Well, slavery was still an issue in Illinois. A lot of people don't think of Illinois as a slave state, but back at that time, there were slaves living in Illinois.
Absolutely. And it was legal. And one of the problems in our territory becoming a state was that the law that ruled admission to the Union as a state, the Northwest Ordinance, forbid slavery. So what we had to do was tread a very fine line. We wanted to keep the settlers here, many who came from the South and had brought their slaves and were pro-slavery. We wanted to keep them here. We wanted to get more people here. How do we do that? How do we appease those folks and still toe the line with Northwest Ordinance, which forbids slavery? And we did that by framing our first state's constitution, which basically enabled both. The new state's constitution basically said, we will not allow future slavery, but the existing slaves can stay. It was a bit of wordplay, if you will, that opened the door for what became slavery in Illinois by another name, indentured servitude.
So Illinois becomes a state in 1818. About 40 years later, Abraham Lincoln is elected president, and you wrote that the way that the state's northern boundary was configured really helped ensure that Lincoln did win the presidency. Otherwise, he may never have risen to that level.
That is according to one man I interviewed, Frank Cicero Jr., who just wrote a book about this. And he looked at the vote totals that the Republican Party garnered up in the northern part of Illinois. Our boundaries were extended by our territorial congressional rep, Nathaniel Pope, before we became a state. When he applied to Congress and said, hey, we want to be a state, he also said the boundary should include the bottom half of Lake Michigan, so we would have access to what became Chicago. It wasn't at the time, of course. This opened up, as we now know, an enormous land for a lot of population, future population. And Frank Cicero Jr. has looked at the votes and the research and has said, if that boundary had not been extended by Nathaniel Pope, we may never have had Abraham Lincoln as our president.
Circling back to the decision to seek statehood in 1818, is it safe to say that the state then jumped the gun on this?
I think it is. Yeah, I do. First of all, there was no real call from the residents for us to gain statehood. And we didn't have the population. It's very clear. It's a pretty funny story, really, about how we frankly lied. We cooked the books. We were supposed to have 60,000 people. We didn't have near that. But we had to prove to Congress that we had 40,000. Frankly, we didn't have that. So one of the historians I interviewed was Illinois State Archives Director Dave Jones. He explains very well about how we handled that problem.
Nathaniel Pope, what he did, which was brilliant, was when you conduct a census, it's the federal government that conducts a census. He slipped into the bill that, hey, don't worry about it. Illinois will do the census for you. You guys are busy there in Washington. You don't want to take the time. We'll conduct a census. And the federal government bought it.
In many ways, we weren't ready, but we made it work, right? The Illinois way, we made it work.
But had they waited, and you've talked about some of the decisions made with the state's boundaries, is it safe to say had they waited too long, we might be a much smaller state today and a less powerful state?
You could probably make that argument. It's hard to say how long we would have had to wait to be less powerful, but certainly by starting this process as early as we did, we were in a position to grab land that ended up helping us enormously become a powerful state. And in retrospect, while it was premature, it served us very, very well.
That's Tara McClellan McAndrew. She wrote about the way Illinois became a state back in 1818. We also talked for a moment about Illinois' first state house, which is now long gone.
One of the other problems with when we became a state was where are we going to meet? We had no capital. So our lawmakers kept meeting at the territorial capital, which is Kaskaskia. And one little bit of trivia that I think is interesting. The first state house we ever had in Kaskaskia is completely gone. It is either in the Mississippi River or it's in the Gulf of Mexico. It was washed away by floods in Kaskaskia, so we can't see it. It is no more.
You can find a photo of the Kaskaskia State House. It's at statewideshow.org.